Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle, and here with me today is Jesse Lowry. In the next half hour, we'll be talking with Lou Keeley, an animal supervisor here at Blank Park Zoo, and we're going to be talking about his recent trip to Uganda to work with rhinos. So, first of all, Jesse's going to talk a little bit about conservation at Blank Park Zoo. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, so glad to be here again. I'm Jesse Lowry. I'm the conservation manager here at Blank Park Zoo. And just wanted to talk for a minute about the conservation efforts at the zoo and how we're working to save animals in the wild. What we do at the zoo is try to connect people with nature. We see the zoo as a window to the wild, a place, a recreational and educational place for you to bring your family, bring the community for them to see the beautiful, charismatic animals that we have here, like the lions and tigers and snow leopard and giraffe. But we want to change that sense of awe that we all get when we see those beautiful creatures into a real conservation action, into something that's actually going to make a difference for wild populations around the world. And so that's what we try to do here at the Blank Park Zoo. We've got a lot of programs working to save animals in the wild. We've got our pollinator conservation project, Plant Grow Fly. Another project called Upcycle, where we remove invasive plant species from local parks to help the native plants thrive. We also care for and breed endangered and rare animals to really hedge against extinction and some conditions that are happening in the wild around the world. And we support field programs, those organizations and people that are out on the front lines working to save animals. And some examples of the projects that we support are to save hornbills, snow leopards, tigers, rhinos. We support them all financially every year. But another way that we can support them is by sending our expert staff to the field to directly aid in these projects. And that's where the Staff Conservation Fund comes into play. We started this program a couple years ago to find resources to send our staff to the field. A lot of these field organizations are very small nonprofits, and they're working in harsh conditions. And here at Blank Park Zoo, we've got a full staff with experts from veterinary care to animal husbandry. We've got people who can do graphic design. We've got great writers. We've got a huge staff here at the zoo that is able to lend their talents and expertise to help these field organizations save these animals that we all care so dearly about. And so, again, Lou Keeley is the supervisor of the large mammal team, and he was the recipient of our Staff Conservation Fund this year. So we'll be talking about his experience working for the Ziwa Rhino Sanctuary. And Lou, do you want to tell us a little bit about Ziwa, its goals, and what they're working towards?
Sure. So going a little bit of a history lesson here, rhinos have been extinct from Uganda, locally extinct from that country, since the 1980s. And a lot of that was directly due to the wars going on during that time, civil unrest, a lot of people poaching rhinos, armies poaching rhinos, just due to all that warring going on, for lack of a better term. So since the 80s, no rhinos. And originally the species there were the northern white rhino and the black rhino, which we have here at Blank Park Zoo. So really the overall goal of Ziwa Rhino Sanctuary is to bring back rhinos to the country of Uganda. And so since the 2000s, they've brought in a number of white rhinos to bring into their little sanctuary there, little in comparison to the kind of the rest of the country, for the goal of breeding these white rhinos and putting them back into Uganda's national wild parks. So that's kind of their overall goal, and they have many different missions to kind of achieve that goal. So it's a pretty big goal that they do have, bringing rhinos back to the country, but they're kind of working piecemeal, doing it bit by bit and being real successful. And they're well on their way to doing it. And it was really exciting to get this opportunity to go out and help them.
So tell us about your trip over there. How long did it take? And then tell us a little bit about what you did while you were there.
Sure. So it's kind of a journey to get from Iowa all the way to Uganda. But it was very, very well worth it. So long plane ride, but that's all right. And when you get in Uganda, it's crazy getting into a car there, and not many road laws, to say the least. So it was a really great adventure, being with a great driver, getting me up to the sanctuary, which is in central Uganda, kind of the grasslands, forest regions around central Uganda. So very beautiful country, really great experience just to see all the wildlife just on the drive up alone. And the local culture there, it seemed like everyone had a smile on their face, and it was just really, really nice meeting everyone and seeing folks, and they were excited to see me as well. So not many white foreigners, I guess, in Uganda, so they're very excited to see me and talk to me, and it was great to have those interactions.
So when you got to the sanctuary, what was the goal of your trip, and how were you able to help them achieve their goals to help save rhinos?
Yeah, so Ziwa, they have a staff of about over 40 rangers and supporting staff, but they really rely on volunteers to help get their mission accomplished. So the main thing that they have volunteers do, there's a lot of different things to do around the sanctuary. So there's a lot of maintenance needs. They do monitor their rhinos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's always helpful for them to have another set of eyes out there watching rhinos, watching their behaviors. So they're really looking at reproductive behaviors, aggressive behaviors, since it's a smaller park to have a lot of rhinos. So they have about 20 rhinos in there now. They are a little bit of a territorial species, so they're always looking out for the males patrolling the areas. They have multiple bulls out there looking for females. So they're looking at that behavior to really know these animals inside and out, which they really do. And so I was helping them with their behavioral data, collecting that. And other than watching the rhinos, which was my best thing, my favorite thing to do, because you really, all the rangers are on foot. They're not even armed, watching these rhinos. So they get within, 100 feet of these guys, and that's kind of a normal thing. So it was really a great thrill for me to be on the ground with these animals. They're beautiful animals. But other things, just doing maintenance, a lot of the fence line, there's electric fencing all around the sanctuary, so it's pretty extensive, and it takes a lot of maintenance work to kind of keep that up, and so I was doing a lot of fence work. I was painting a lot of things to make it more rhino-proof so the rhinos wouldn't see PVC or certain things that were protecting wires or things like that. They have a school on site there, and I was excited to bring some supplies for them, and I spent some time at the school there, which was really exciting. The kids loved it, and we played duck, duck, goose, and all that stuff. But there was just a lot of different things that they need help with that I would just do anything that they asked of me, and it was great, and they loved it. They loved having me there. So I think it was both parties got a lot out of that.
I'm curious to know what similar behaviors did you see in the rhinos in Uganda that, you have observed with our rhinos here at Blank Park Zoo? And how did your experience at Blank Park Zoo prepare you to work at Ziwa?
Sure. So here at Blank Park Zoo, we have eastern black rhinos. So it's a different species than what I was working with at Ziwa, which are white rhinos. So here at Blank Park Zoo in a zoo setting, of course, we're very intimate with our rhinos and that we see them every day. We know their behaviors. We know their personalities. Everything about them we know and we get to observe. So it's really kind of great for us to know all these behaviors that they do have and do show. And so going over to Uganda and watching these white rhinos in their natural habitat, it was really interesting to see the similarities and the differences. So these white rhinos are a little bit more gregarious. They like to hang out a little bit more than the more solitary black rhinos do. So you follow around these moms with their babies. There's a lot of babies there, which is exciting for me, of course, the awe factor. But they'd congregate with, a female or two and their offspring, and they'd spend the day together. Then the next day they'd be apart, and it was just a very kind of loose structure. So it was great seeing those different types of social interactions, which we don't get to see too much here at the zoo. So just to see what behaviors they show when they're meeting for the first time, like the moms would have the calves they'd set up little face-to-face meetings, which was really neat to see. And that's how the rangers would describe to me. It's like, this mom is introducing this calf to this other calf. And it was really cool to kind of see that. And with our little calf, Tumani, who was born in October 2016, of course, she hangs out with mom all the time. But we've also, what we call howdy. So Tumani has met her father, Keanu, through a barrier, but they'd never been together before. So we were seeing all these little different behaviors that mom would kind of just closely watch over little Tumani when she was interacting with Keanu. And so, you know, when I was kind of seeing that back in October, November, when Tumani was first born, and seeing that, and I went in February to Uganda and seeing those types of behaviors, really for our next calf here at Blank Park Zoo, it'll really kind of clue me in a little bit more knowledgeable about how to introduce rhinos and that kind of social aspect of things.
Another thing that I'm really curious about, because I actually got to go to Uganda as well about 5 years ago to help a chimpanzee sanctuary there. And one of my favorite things about the trip was the people and hearing their stories and talking to them about their wildlife and this just sense of passion and pride that they had, that they were helping take care of these charismatic animals that were becoming so rare that people from all over the world were coming to see. And so what was it like to walk around with those rangers and tell us their story?
It was incredible. I mean, of all the things I could talk about, there's so many parts of this trip, but the rangers were one of the most special parts of it. You know, so growing up, there were a lot of younger, you know, rangers, you know, in their 20s. But they've never seen a rhino in the wild before they got to the sanctuary. And they were so proud that they were the only place in the whole country that had rhinos. And that was that sense of pride there. And they are keeping these rhinos alive. There have been no poaching events at the sanctuary, which they're extremely proud of. And we know poaching is just a widespread epidemic throughout Africa. But that was their biggest point of pride, was they had rhinos at this little spot in Uganda, and they really were stressing to me that they wanted their children and their grandchildren to be able to see rhinos, you know, once they get out into the national parks in Uganda. So it was great to see that, and really that carried over to even the folks that lived outside the sanctuary. Directly outside the sanctuary, there's a lot of livestock, and they had a great relationship, you know, with these people, these local people. And so they were telling me about one time where there was talk about poaching, you know, amongst the guards, where someone was planning on doing it. But it was a whistleblower that kind of stepped forward, because they have this great relationship with the rangers and the local people, that they did not want that happening within their sanctuary. It would mean their jobs. It would mean a life of a rhino or multiple rhinos. And it's extremely dangerous. So they kind of stepped up and stopped that before it ever happened. And it was just great to hear that story, that sense of pride that they had to be able to step up and stop something like that from happening.
Talk a little bit, since you mentioned poaching, talk a little bit about the pressures rhinos face in Africa.
Sure. So in the country of South Africa alone, they say there's a rhino poached every 8 hours, so 3 rhinos a day. And so this is happening mainly due to the market in Southeast Asia, where they're kind of wanting these rhino horns for different reasons. Some folks think it cures cancer. The big thing right now is these countries are becoming more and more wealthy. And so you have these kind of middle-aged businessmen who are buying these horns or rhino horn powder or whatever the product is, just for kind of a wealth status. It's a status symbol. It's like having a Lamborghini here or something silly like that, where they're buying these horns so they could show people that, hey, I have enough money to do it. And so the people that are poaching rhinos, you know, mostly the people that are doing it are locals that are very poor. And so, you know, poaching a rhino horn, it's probably worth a lifetime of money for them. So they're at the point where having that risk of killing a rhino and getting caught is kind of outweighs, or the money portion of that outweighs that risk. And so that's what's happening down there. But with any kind of crime syndication or anything, there's these kind of big kingpins at the top, and then you go all the way down to these folks who are actually doing the poaching. So it's kind of a disconnect there. And it's the same that we see in the drug trade, the human trafficking trade, and a lot of these are kind of intertwined with these criminals that are doing it. So with these, as we know, with drug trade and trying to stop it, it's almost next to impossible. So they're trying everything they can to stop it, but it just keeps getting worse and worse every year, it seems.
And when we're talking about poaching, you know, poaching was really rampant in the 80s and the early 90s. And then conservationists and governments around the world really did a lot of work to get it under control. And the past 10 years, we've seen a huge increase in poaching again. And as Lou said, about 3 rhinos every day are poached. 96 elephants are poached every day. But there's many more elephants than there are rhinos right now. And so what we need to do is, you know, make sure that we're working with governments and working within the United States to make sure that as tourists, when we travel to other places in the world, we're not buying these products. And it's something that zoos and aquariums are really starting to take a lead in making sure that we can help stop this trafficking. And we should mention, too, what rhino horn is made out of. It's made out of keratin, which is exactly the same ingredient as our fingernails and our hair. And there have been many scientific studies that it has no medicinal purpose whatsoever. When we're talking about elephants, they're poached for their tusks, and tusks are carved into trinkets, which is also a status symbol. But there's been a lot of great efforts, especially by an organization called Wild Aid, and working to decrease the demand with public service announcements and other marketing campaigns in those places around the country where there's a high demand for these products, making sure that people know that these are wildlife products. And so we've had a huge success, I think, lately from that. So, Lou, what really surprised you about your trip? And did you feel that your time was well worth it and that you achieved your goals when you were there at the sanctuary?
Sure. So we touched upon it earlier. I think what surprised me the most was these folks doing so much with what little resources they did have. And like I said before, this undertaking is huge to bring a population of rhinos back to a country. But with everything that they're doing, breeding rhinos is just the start of it. But protecting the rhinos, keeping them in one area safely, it's just incredible. All the odds that are stacked up against them, and they're kind of rising up and doing this great job. And it's just from the people, the passion that they have there. They just have such a great connection with the community. They fund hospitals, they fund wells for the local people, and it's just a great cycle of that type of relationship, and they have those just that communication there just to help them moving forward in every aspect that they do. And for me to go there and just to be whatever small part of it that I could do, watching the rhinos, helping them do maintenance around the sanctuary, I felt good, just at the end of the day, that I could help do something to bring rhinos back in the wild and help save them. Because, like Jesse, you talked about, you know, it can seem dire and very negative with all that we know about rhino poaching. But stories like these need to get out there where people are doing good and they are helping rhinos, and that word needs to be spread. It's coming back to the zoo here. I try to talk about that as much to visitors as I can, telling them about my story, about my trip. And they really kind of light up when I talk to them about it. And it's great to really kind of spread that message that we in little zoo in Des Moines, Iowa, in the middle of nowhere, you know, relative, are making a big difference in to wild animals. And it's a really great feeling.
And so the ultimate goal of ZIWA is to release them out of the sanctuary into maybe another national park. Is that right? And how many years do you think is that away?
They're not quite sure yet. So they breed, and they usually have about 2 to 3 births. So right now they're sitting at about 20 rhinos. They want to get it up to at least 40 rhinos to where they could start getting them in the parks. But then with the parks, they face the other side of it with securing those parks so that poaching doesn't happen there. So that's their next biggest step, is working with the Uganda Wildlife Authority with getting these parks secure so that they can move these animals.
So tell us a little bit about rhinos. I mean, we have them here at the zoo, and you're a supervisor here, so you're an expert. Tell us a little bit about what rhinos are all about.
I think we start with their horns and their size, and I think they're an iconic species. Everyone knows what a rhino is. But when people come and see the rhinos or meet a rhino, if they're lucky enough, you know just how sweet they are. They're very gentle animals. They have a bad rap of being aggressive and charging. That's mostly because they have really poor eyesight. So when something startles them or spooks them, they have the tendency to charge first and then ask questions later. But that's just their defense mechanism because they're so big and powerful. But if something is threatening them, charge at them, and usually that threat will run away. But here at the zoo, they're so sweet animals. You could pet them. You know, our male Keanu, he'd lay down and roll over and let you pet your belly all day, and it's great to be around these guys. And I think, you know, watching them on exhibit out here at the zoo, people get a good sense of all the behaviors that they do. They'll roll in the mud, you know, grazing around in the grass, doing all these things that rhinos do in the wild, and seeing that here at the zoo, I think people get a real good connection, especially seeing this, our cute calf, grow up, and seeing how much she weighs. We have a little dry erase board in our barn, which shows the daily weights of the rhinos, and people love seeing, you know, how much Tumani is growing over time. And, what a great species. And, it's great now to have this connection with our zoo and their wild counterparts, because it's so important right now that we do learn and know more about these guys.
Describe their barn that they live in. There's some special features that were incorporated into that when it was built. And if you could tell us a little bit about that, that'd be great.
Sure. So with this special species, we do need special things to take care of them. So in the wintertime, during these kind of dry months when we have the heat going in the barn, so these guys can't take too much cold, and they can go out in the snow a little bit, but we like to keep them inside nice and warm. But we give them baths once a week, so keepers will hose them down. They actually apply a special shampoo, rhino shampoo, to them, let it sit and soak, and it keeps their skin healthy and moisturized. They love getting scrubbed, and they love the water and playing around in the water as well. So we actually have shower heads in our barn so they can have little rhino showers whenever they're feeling like it. We have softer rubber floors to keep their joints nice and healthy. All the doors are hydraulically operated. So a lot of people ask us if we go in with the rhinos. No matter how sweet they are, we still don't go in with them just because they can be dangerous. Any large mammal like that can be dangerous. So we can shift the animals from one pen to the next without having to go in with them, and they're great with it. We also have kind of a specialized rhino chute where we do a lot of our training with the rhinos, and we can weigh them every day. And so we've done ultrasounds with our female Ayana when she had Tumani in the womb. And it was great to see Tumani develop, and we got to kind of monitor that, make sure everything was good and healthy. We do voluntary blood draws with the rhinos. They present every side of their body so we can inspect everything, their oral cavities. So everything in this barn is geared towards, you know, making sure that we're working with these animals the best, safest way we can. And it's been a really nice facility for us since it opened in 2012.
There's one feature you didn't mention, but the air handling system also changes the air out. So visitors don't get the full smell, right?
I think they still do. I had a kid come up to me the other day and say, "It smells in here. You needed some air freshener." I said, what flavor do you like to smell? He's like, "Pine." Okay, I'll get some pine air freshener for you. Yeah, they're stinky. Yeah. Nothing you can do about that.
Lou, tell us more about that baby. Tell us about Tumani and how we found out that her mom was pregnant, and, you know, how fun that was to wait for the baby to come, and what she means to the population of eastern black rhinos.
Sure. So, you know, currently in North America, there's less than 60 eastern black rhinos, which we have here. And within the last 5 years, they haven't been breeding too well in zoos in North America. So with Tumani's birth in October 2016, she was just the second rhino born within the past 5 years. So for us, that was a real special kind of milestone, and just to kind of get the rhino breeding program kind of back into full swing. And since her birth, there's been, I think, 4 births and a lot more on the way. So we kind of first knew she was pregnant. First, we saw our 2 adults breeding. So that's step one. And then we just monitor her weight, which we can do in our barn, which is great. And then there's just subtle differences in Ayana's behavior. We noticed she wasn't cycling, which is indicative of being pregnant and everything. And Kiana's behavior changed a little bit too, where he wasn't as interested in breeding with Ayana. So all those clues led us to believe that hopefully Ayana was pregnant. And we started doing ultrasound training, so she let us do ultrasounds on her, which were great. And then, you know, finally we got one good look at an ultrasound, and it kind of open up our eyes and say, hey, she is pregnant, which was just a great, what a great feeling. You know, all the staff here at the zoo, from keepers to the folks that designed the barn, everyone, it was just a great feeling that we did this and we're kind of contributing to this species.
That's an amazing story, and it was such a heartwarming time for all of us who have worked here at Blank Park Zoo. And we got attention nationwide, and the community just really rallied behind this beautiful baby. There's only 800 Eastern Black Rhinos left, and that's captive and wild populations put together. And so she is an extremely important animal to the global population, and we're so excited to be able to have her here at Blank Park Zoo. And I just want to also mention that the way that we fund the Staff Conservation Fund, the way that we fund our pollinator work, the way that we financially support all of these projects in the wild, including another rhino project, International Rhino Foundation, which we've been supporting for several years, is by folks coming to the zoo. Every time people come to the zoo, a portion of all the revenue that we make goes to save animals in the wild. So if you come on a busy Saturday with your family, you're helping save animals in the wild. When you buy an ice cream cone, when you ride the train, when you come to a special event, when you donate to the zoo, you are helping this effort across Blank Park Zoo and all other AZA accredited zoos in the nation help save these animals that we all care and love so much. And so it's really a community-wide effort, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Lou, for joining us today. And Blank Park Zoo is open year-round, and you can learn all about the zoo animals and the zoo, special events, and previous episodes of the show at our website at blankparkzoo.com. And make sure you check out Blank Park Zoo's YouTube channel. And on that channel, you can see a film of the rhinos taking a bath and little baby Tumani. It's a lot of fun. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please make sure and join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.